Hello and welcome to season 4 of the KO Knockout Podcast. This season, we continue to shine a light on the obstacles and triumphs of trailblazing women. On today's episode, we sit down with Marcy Dixon, CEO and founder of Alterity ADR, as she takes us through her journey as a mother, an athlete, and an expert in conflict resolution. While her career track has not been the typical experience, she has found a way to share her passion and has dedicated herself to helping others find their voice. Please enjoy.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Weekly Knockout. We have a special guest here today, Marcy Dixon. Marcy, I want to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's great to be with you.
So Marcy is one of those daring, bold, special people that you hear about that took the opportunity during the last 2 years of chaos and reflection and deep thinking and great resignations and all of that opportunity and obstacle set that we've all had to deal with. And Marcy has decided to branch out and start her own business, hang her own flag. And it's a fascinating story. So I'm going to maybe just start there, Marcy. Can you give us a little intro into you, your background, and what are you doing right now?
Sure, absolutely. So I always lead with the fact that I'm a mother, because I think it really does color everything that I do professionally and personally. But Lindsay, as you know, I've had a really interesting sort of path to where I am right now. Like, I work in the legal services industry, but had no desire to be a lawyer. It's so interesting because, early on, I always envisioned myself working in some sort of like creative profession where I would write, or I would, create something and live in Paris and do, things that I'm not doing right now. So I've just had an odd career path. And you mentioned the pandemic. I know it's been life-changing for so many people, but it really was a catalyst for me to stop and reflect on, my past in terms of what I had decided to do professionally. And then just have that I guess an existential crisis, if you will, like that moment where I decided, okay, how can you operationalize everything that you've learned, all the passions that you've had, all the people that you've met, and the meaningful work that you want to do and the purpose that you have, and how can you channel that in a new profession, a new career? That's exactly what I did. So I originally worked in media and in publishing, and that was the bulk of my career until I discovered the world of alternative dispute resolution, conflict resolution. And it was so fascinating to me. And I mentioned how odd my career path has been, because the irony is that I had an opportunity to go to law school for free when I lived in New Orleans. I was working for a publishing company there, loved my job, was trying to figure out, what exactly I wanted to do, but had an opportunity to go to law school, and at the last minute decided that it was not my path and I wasn't going to do it. So I chose a different path, but here I am again, working in legal services now. So it's been strange. My background is steeped in publishing and media, and now I am working with brilliant mediators, arbitrators, lawyers, and former judges.
So you're building a business in conflict resolution, and you think it's strange, but then we hear that you're a mother, you are an athlete, an amazing athlete, you worked with a lot of lawyers, and you're in media, oh my goodness. So is it really all that surprising that you're sort of an expert in conflict resolution?
Probably not. There's that inner conflict and I got it resolved. So yeah, no, it made sense. I mean, look, I think that if you are acting with intention and you are honoring the path that you want, the answers will come. And for me, I said no to things that just did not make sense in that moment. And I'm glad that I did, because I was meant to be exactly where I am right now. And so I'm glad that I took the time to really try to figure out what it is that I wanted to do and act with intention, even though if at the time I didn't realize that that's what I was doing.
What is conflict resolution? What is this specialty that you've sort of fallen into?
Yeah, so it's actually multi-pronged, but in the space that I'm in, it's alternative dispute resolution. And it's a compilation of all the various dispute resolution tools that individuals have at their disposal when they are locked in conflict. So commonly in a lawsuit. So mediation, arbitration, neutral evaluation, there are all these different resources and tools that individuals can use to resolve conflict early in the process, instead of going through the entire litigation process and then going to trial, which can be incredibly risky. So for me, you know, I was exposed to it through a personal situation where I watched a loved one lose everything through a very nasty business dissolution dispute with his partner. And I mean, it ruined his life. And I observed what had happened. And if he had had confidence in, I think, the legal system in general, and had known more about his options and his ability to hire a mediator, if his lawyer had actually counseled him to do that, I think the outcome would have been a lot different. So that was the early exposure for me. But in my previous role, I was the marketing and business development, the chief marketing and business development officer for a regional dispute resolution company. And it was there that I really just became obsessed with this industry that enables individuals to resolve conflict. So in the workplace, business disputes, wide range. So I went deep. I got certified as a mediator. I don't practice, but I just completely immersed myself in this world and in this industry.
Why did you decide that it was time to start your own business in this sector? Because I mean, I've followed you for years, and it seemed like you were really successful and really passionate about what you were doing, working for a great firm, all of that. But you know, here you are now basically launching your own company. That takes a ton of energy. I mean, what's motivating you?
I do a lot of things. You know, I mentioned that I'm a mother. So I have two girls at home, and they are watching everything that I do, everything that I say. And when I look at some of the pervasive issues of our time, societal issues, I look at how it's going to impact them and all the other children that are going to have to deal with climate change and, you know, socioeconomic inequalities. And when I was in my previous role, yes, you were absolutely right. I had developed this place where I had influence, and I was able to do something that I loved. And I, you know, was working with really brilliant practitioners. But the one thing that would keep me up at night was the lack of inclusion and diversity in the space. Like, I almost felt complicit working in my previous role, knowing some of the things that were happening behind the scenes and my inability to make an impact. So the fact that you saw me writing about it and speaking about it on podcasts was not enough. So I would leave my job, come home, look at my girls, and say, I am not doing enough for them, for anyone that is eventually going to move through this system. And it needs to change. It needs to be better. It needs to serve individuals that don't have a voice. So the pandemic, like, when I say it was a catalyst for change, it was absolutely the catalyst for me. Like, I was locked in a house with my family. I lost loved ones. It really gave me the time and the space to really evaluate what I was doing and how to apply what I had learned, what I was passionate about, and the change that I wanted to see, and craft that into something that could make a more meaningful impact in this space. So, as you know, I am hyper committed to creating opportunities and access for women and people of color in this industry. So that's kind of what set me on this path. It was a combination of a lot of things, Lindsay. It was very, very unfortunate, interactions with some of the men that I worked with. It was It was all of the events of the summer of 2020. It was everything that pushed me to the edge and said, I need to do something different. I need to do something more. And, you know, with the support of my partner, I left that job and figured out what I was going to do. And initially it was going to be to create a nonprofit to support women and minority mediators and arbitrators. I built up this network across the country. And I said, you know, how do I bring that to life and animate it in some way that's meaningful? So I just started to build it. And, you know, I started to talk to some of my friends that work in the BC space and our investors and early stage companies, and landed, you know, two incredible investors who are now partners in the business. And in the matter of 3.5 months, went from leaving my role to building Alterity ADR, which is the mediation and arbitration company that I own, to launching a national platform. And we launched with 15 mediators and arbitrators in August of 2021. And we're on pace to have 50 by probably, you know, May of 2022. So it's amazing. And I'm really excited. I wake up every day. I look at my girls. They drive me crazy in the morning. But I look at them and they are watching me do something that has incredible import and value. And I just love the fact that I can do that for them and for all the other people who will, you know, work in this space in the future.
I think that one of the most fascinating parts of your story is that you initially thought, hey, maybe I'll do a nonprofit. And then you went and really started a business, a scalable business, a venture capital backed business. You know, you're going to make a huge impact. I mean, what do you think is the difference between starting a nonprofit in this space and starting a business in this space? Tell us a little bit about that decision.
I think there are obviously a lot of differences. And if I'm being completely honest, the move to start a nonprofit was a selfless one. I'm not in this for the money. Like, I want to see the change. So for me, it made sense to start a nonprofit. But there are very distinct differences, you know, like there are many tax advantages to operating a nonprofit. It's definitely easier if you are a mission-driven organization, which we are too. But, you know, I really credit my friends and my partners with talking to me and giving me the courage to decide to make this for profit, because I think as, you know, as a woman of color, I think that I thought that it would be more palatable to launch a nonprofit versus a real company in a space that is heavily dominated by white men. Like who is I to want to create a for-profit entity and compete with some of the larger institutional providers? So I think when I was able to get past that hurdle, and that barrier of limiting what was possible, it was an easy decision. And I actually considered forming a B Corp as well. And that may be something that, you know, lies in the future for us. But I think it's possible to be a for-profit entity and still be purpose-driven. Like you, I think as women, as women of color particularly, there's this sense that you can't do both. They're not mutually exclusive. So that's a distinction for me. And I'm glad that you decided to go in this direction. It's going well.
Sounds like you've had some great friends, mentors, industry partners. I know that's so important. We talk a lot about that personal advisory board. People call it different things, but is there one person who's really had one or two people who've had a really positive influence as you've been on this 2-year journey? Or it hasn't even been 2 years. It's been like 6 months, Marcy. Oh my goodness. But tell me about the influence of your friends and the people around you.
Oh my gosh. I mean, they're absolutely essential. Like I wouldn't be able to operate without them. Like you mentioned personal advisory board. That's the terminology I use too. Like I have incredibly loving, non-judgmental people in my corner who are able to check me when I need to, you know, when I need to like reflect and think through something. And I don't have to do that on my own. But, you know, really wouldn't be fair to just like highlight one or two people. I mean, there are just so many people. There's my mother, who has always been my biggest supporter. There's my sister-in-law, who you know, years ago, it's just like, I see you building something one day, do it. And she's always there to, you know, bounce ideas off of. There's my best friend, Lisa, who works at Goldman Sachs, who was able to advise me on how to construct the deal with my investors. And I have just a series of best friends who they're just there and they love unconditionally and they provide feedback and criticism, like all the things, but it's through love. And then even in the professional sphere, when I was building Alterity ADR, I wanted to have an advisory board, like supporters that believed in our mission and would be committed to being involved and being around. And now we started with 11. Now we started with 14. We have 14 advisory board members who are former CEOs, former general counsel. It's just an incredible group of individuals. So I'd say collectively, they all keep me grounded and they all provide counsel and advice and are there when things are going well and when things are not going well. And I just need someone to listen or someone to, you know, give me a reality check.
This is a loaded question, but like, what are the obstacles? I mean, you're moving quickly. You're scaling. You have one of these sort of big audacious goals early on. I think most entrepreneurs, you know, sort of thinks, I, at least let me speak for myself, not others, but think too small, at least initially, but you're not. I mean, you're really creating something that, that's competitive and scalable and wonderful and aligns with your values. Like, what are the obstacles for you at this stage?
Great question. There are a lot of them. It's not as prevalent now, but definitely in my previous role, some of the most glaring obstacles were just the dealing with racism, sexism, gender bias every single day, every day. That was the biggest obstacle for me. In terms of figuring out how to navigate those experiences and those interactions with individuals. But that's not an issue anymore because I've created this new space that is built on inclusion and belonging and respect, and everyone has a voice. So that was early on, it was one obstacle. But I would say now, you know, a lot of the obstacles that I encounter are almost self-manufactured. It's often fear. I have this love-hate relationship with the presence of fear. It shows up in so many different ways and it's always there. But I think the biggest obstacle has been being kind to myself and being able to stare something that I'm afraid of, stare it down, and really just dig through the discomfort of knowing that I'm trying to stretch myself and I'm doing things. But, you know, to this point, haven't been done. My organization is the largest minority and women-owned dispute resolution company in the country. I'm not a lawyer. So there are often times where I let that fear, or I don't want to call it imposter syndrome, sort of cloud what it is that I need to do or how I need to show up. So it's been a personal obstacle. And then another one I would say is just related to how this industry works. And that's just the unfortunate nature of like how far we have to go in terms of making this space more inclusive and more diverse, and knowing that it's a seemingly insurmountable obstacle. I mean, we have come so far, but there's so much more that we need to do. So to me, that's a glaring obstacle that, you know, I work on every day, my team works on. But those have been the ones that come to mind. I promise you, I probably have a list in my journal of like 50 others.
I know what you mean on the latter part. It's like sort of you realize you have to play the long game, no matter how much energy and how many things you want to get done quickly. Like sometimes you just have to play the long game. It's kind of like parenting too. It requires so much patience.
Yeah.
Speaking of parenting, I mean, you've mentioned that you're a mother a couple of times here, and it seems like it's a really important part of your identity and what drives you. You know, what do you hope your legacy for your girls is? Like, what do you hope your impact in doing this? What message does it give to them as they look forward and develop their own dreams and ambitions?
That anything is possible. anything. Like my 6-year-old will tell you with a very straight face that she can literally do anything she sets her mind to. And it's been probably one of the greatest rewards for them to witness this entire journey, because it hasn't been easy. I mean, they've witnessed me build this from day one, and I've had to communicate to them what I was doing and why I wasn't around so much and why it meant so much and why it was going to impact them for the better and other people, and they understand that. So the legacy that I hope to leave for them is that they understand and they know that they literally have all the tools to do what they need and want to do. And even if they don't, they are equipped with the courage and the resources and the community, because they will build community to get it, what they need. So that's my hope for them. We were just talking offline about how my kids are in this strange phase right now. So I hope that's the legacy that they see, but it's, I am doing this for them. And I know that I hope that they will understand the sacrifices that I've had to make in terms of not being able to really, master work-life balance. That is not my strong suit these days. I hope that they'll understand when they're much older.
I am sure they're incredibly proud of you now, and will be even more so when they are able to fully understand what you're doing. So leave us with your message to women out there, or just anyone who has a dream like this, to make a bigger impact, to live by their values, to do something for their children. What's a mantra that you live by, or a message that you'd like to share with women out there?
Well, I would say, so two things come up. The first is, if there is a dream, if there is a goal, if there's something that you would like to do, that for whatever reason, whether it's society or your family or your colleagues or anyone, even yourself, if you're being told that you can't do it, just do it anyway. Okay? I mean, I promise you it is worth the risk. And even if you fail and it doesn't work, like, the ability to know that you took that risk anyway and you learned and you grew in the process is invaluable. So I would say honor whatever it is that you want to do and just pursue it with wild abandon. And then I'd say the second piece of advice would be to just trust yourself. I mean, it's unbelievable what can happen when you can have the necessary courage to trust your instincts, to believe in the training and the knowledge and the skills that you have, and understand that you have supporters in the community cheering you on. But if you trust yourself, it will work out. I mean, it may not be exactly what you want, but you will get to that place where you feel fulfilled because you took that first step. So trust yourself and talk to yourself as you would your best friend. Sometimes when I am in some sort of negative spiral, shame spiral, whatever it is, I have to stop. And I'm like, what would you say to your best friend right now? And then there's more of a gentle approach in terms of how I navigate the emotions and or decision or whatever it is that's coming up. So those are the things. And then, I know that we've talked about this offline, and, my mantra for like the past 7 years, ironic because it's the quote is actually attributable to a man, but it still resonates deeply, is just to find space. I love Viktor Frankl's quote from his book, A Man's Search for Meaning. I say Woman's Search for Meaning. And it's between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in that response lies our freedom and our growth. And I honestly say that to myself every day, like with every single thing that I do, with every decision that I make, I pause, I access that space, and that really governs how I respond to people, how I make decisions, and how I regulate my emotions and anything that comes up on this crazy journey that I'm on.
That's a beautiful way to end, because it's not just a message, but a tactic. That's something that we can all work on, a skill that we can develop. I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Marcy. Wow. Well, I can't wait to watch the next chapter of your story. It's moving very quickly, but thank you so much for sharing this. And, you know, please come back and talk to us again as the company grows, and we look forward to hearing it.
Will do. Thanks so much for having me, Lindsay. Good to see you.
All right. Thanks, Marcy. Take care.
Thank you for joining this conversation with Marcy Dixon, who believes that if you act with intention and honor your own path, the answers will come. This has been the season 4 premiere of the KO Knockout podcast. Thanks for listening.